to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit JanPro.ca. So just as we were going to break after the crossover, Pierre LeBrun with a big-time update on Twitter. He says, Team USA has been informed Quinn Hughes is not traveling here to Boston to join the team.
This part's interesting.
Wasn't medically cleared. Now he also says, sounds like Team USA is looking at bringing in a couple of other players just as insurance because of illness going around. But the meat of it there, obviously, Quinn Hughes not traveling to Boston to join Team USA for Thursday's final, specifically because he was not medically cleared, which is interesting, of course. Now, we heard Quinn Hughes address that, right? Hey, the medical team really wants me to take it one step at a time here. However, he did go from a non-contact jersey at yesterday's Canucks practice to a regular jersey at today's Canucks practice, suggesting he's a full participant, and he said he'll be good to go on Saturday against Vegas, but apparently not medically cleared to go join the team USA in Boston.
And there's a difference between being cleared to be a full participant in practice and being medically cleared to play in a playoff-like, and in fact, more than playoff intensity game on Thursday, right? Like there is a distinction there that I do think matters and is actually interesting from a Canucks perspective, right? Hughes said he was hopeful that he'd be cleared medically to play on Saturday, but wasn't committal about it when he met with the media yesterday. So I think all of this squares. It just sucks. You know, this tournament, I was looking at it all year as something I thought could be Quinn Hughes' coming out party, and I'm sick for him. Like, I'm sick for him that he was deprived of that, especially given how poorly the season has gone. How many injuries he's playing through, right? We see the hand. We reportedly the other injury is the oblique. That's not a ton of fun, right? I mean, that's a tough time. And obviously the drama and the heaviness of this season, this Canucks season, multitude of injuries, serious illnesses, a core that's basically combusted. And, you know, I wrote about this a little bit today at The Athletic, but like Quinn Hughes takes this all personally. Like, I guarantee you he's worn this on his shoulders, right? All season long. And from what I hear internally, that's been true, right? There's been a lot of work that he's put in to try and hold this together. He's also individually having one of the great defenseman seasons we've ever seen. I mean, how many points does he lead this team in scoring by now? Like 24, 23?
Yeah.
And he's missed three games. Hasn't even mattered. Guys aren't catching up to him. You know, that this guy's propped this team up. This team is in a playoff spot coming out of the break, mostly because of Quinn Hughes's sublime performance over the course of this year, and to not get this sort of payout for it, right? Clearly the biggest game that the Canucks, or that he'd have an opportunity to play this year, because I don't think the Canucks are getting to a cup final. Sucks. It just sucks.
Yeah,
also go Canada, but it just sucks.
No, it is a bummer because, I mean, as I said in the crossover, I want Canada to win as much as anyone. I'm going to be extremely hyped, extremely fired up for that.
I want them to beat the Team USA with the best defenseman in the world.
You don't want them to have an excuse,
no,
right? You don't want them to be able to say, we were missing Quinn Hughes. Yeah, that's a huge, huge absence from their lineup. So it would have made it more entertaining, would have made it more meaningful for Canada to win. Would have made it faster. Just would have been a better night all around with Quinn Hughes' presence. That's to say nothing, as you say, about just the disappointment for him on an individual level of, you know, being one of the first six players they named and really expected to be kind of the number one defenseman for that team, and then not even getting the opportunity and then kind of having it dangled in front of him here in late notice going into the final game. Tough situation for Quinn Hughes. We'll see. I don't know if players or anyone has spoken to the media after Canucks practice at Rogers Arena. Haven't seen any quotes there, so we'll see if Quinn Hughes speaks or if we get any other official word from the team or the player in reaction to that news. Again, from Pierre LeBrun, Team USA has been informed Quinn Hughes not traveling to Boston to join the team wasn't medically cleared. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now, something we touched on just towards the very end of the crossover there with Donnie and Dolly was Frank Saravalli, of course, Daily Faceoff, NHL insider, regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. He was on Halford and Brough this morning and, you know, had a lot of,
let loose.
a lot of discussion about the Four Nations, but also, of course, because it's Brough, you know, he's got to ask about Elias Pettersson, or at least give Saravalli the floor to speak about Elias Pettersson. And one of the things that Frank said was,
Frank did not, by the way, have the yips.
It's becoming harder and harder. Those are his words, for the Canucks to find takers, or he thinks it will be becoming harder and harder for the Canucks to find takers for Elias Pettersson around the league. And this is in part because of a really massively disappointing performance on a big stage with all eyes in the hockey world on it at the Four Nations. I think there's
he's not wrong.
There's definitely got to be risk attached with it. And I even think of, you know, your Athletic colleague, Fludo Shinzawa, who is covering Sweden, right? Writing a big piece like, Sweden's in trouble without Elias Pettersson. You know what I mean? They need more from him. Like, there is an element of, as much as people, you know, from out east or whatever can check the score sheet and they can check the stats on NHL.com and they can see Elias Pettersson is really struggling, there's a difference between kind of intellectually knowing that and seeing it play out and really internalizing it on a big stage. So I absolutely think there's an element of risk that, oh man, he went to this situation and it still looked really bad. And do teams start to get spooked? Does it start to lower his value? Like, I don't think that's a far out suggestion from Frank Saravalli, even though I know, as you said, there will also be a lot of teams interested still in his services.
Yeah, I mean, I think Frank is right. I just think it reflects a different thing than I've been saying, right? Which is that, I mean, Pettersson's going to hold value, but not for everybody, right? Like, I, you know, it's not like I expected him to find his game. I wasn't indulging in that he's going to find his game and have fun fantasy about the Four Nations, because I'm watching him play and I think he's physically limited in terms of his foot speed. And I think that's snowballed into a confidence issue more generally. And I think that's why you're seeing him be indecisive. And this sort of tracks back to what I was talking about all summer about, like, Pettersson needs to find a B game, because it seems like when he's not 100%, all the precision stuff that makes him so lethal or has throughout his career seems to disappear a little bit. And, you know, I think the fact is that we're, yeah, I mean, the fact is that there are teams that will see Pettersson's form across the last 84 plus games and be like, I don't know. That's a huge risk. It's a huge ticket. You know, he's beefed with a teammate. So, you know, that's a huge swing for us to take at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And there are teams who will say, well, how else do we ever get a franchise cornerstone centerman who can produce at a point per game clip? Right? I mean, it's not like you find those guys on the trade market if they're playing at their best, right? They only, the fact is that Pettersson's struggles are the only reasons that he might possibly be available for anybody, right? And that's a big part of this equation. Like, if you're a team like Buffalo, right, or a team like Calgary, right, or a team that's in need of more than anything else a franchise centerman, by the way, a team like Vancouver, right, the thing about Pettersson is it's a huge bet to place. 11.6, seven more years after this one, right? He's played poorly across 12 calendar months. That's almost 100 games when you include the playoffs, if not more. And yeah, I mean, that will exceed the risk tolerance for a lot of organizations. But what do you get if you're right? You know, like, that's the thing you have to remember here. Like, what do you get if you're right? I'm sure the Canucks are feeling this disillusionment. It's impossible not to, right? You're watching him play and it's like, oh man, it's tough to believe that what we're seeing isn't permanent.
It's tough to watch.
It's tough to watch.
And again, and I've made this point a lot, like, you need a really compelling theory about why it's going to be different. Right.
Yeah, which we do not have.
Other than, well, he'll get better. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he'll snap out of it. Snap out of what? We don't know. You know, so like, and the Canucks are in the best position to have a theory, and they're not necessarily going to tell us, right? But as you said, we don't have that. And it's not as if, as much as we can all say, well, he looks clearly physically limited, but Who knows if when that is returning? What's the confidence side of this? How is that going to get fixed? We don't have an easy template to say, okay, here's the roadmap to him getting back to his full powers or close to that again. And so that's another thing to me, just the sheer uncertainty of it. And then you're right, when you're watching it play out in real time, day after day after day, it's just kind of so negative and so unrelentingly negative, his performance, that it's hard not to buy into the idea that it is going to be permanent.
Yeah, but you also have to be able to think differently about these sorts of opportunities, right? Like, what do you get without swinging big in this league?
Yep.
Very, very little, right? Sam Reinhart wasn't a winner. Sam Bennett was a third line center.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Carter Verhaeghe was a fourth line player. Gustav Forsling had been claimed off waivers twice, right? You have to take some swings. What's true today isn't necessarily true in a year or two in hockey. We see it literally all the time. And the teams that take big swings and find ways to mine value do best, typically speaking. I mean, the Jack Eichel reference point, I think, for me, is the one that should loom largest here, right? This was a player who had a back surgery that we'd never previously seen. Like, literally, we had never seen it for a pro hockey player, right? He played 21 games during that weird bubble season in 2021, the last of which was on March 7th. And, he didn't play again until February 16th of the next calendar year, when the Vegas Golden Knights traded a top prospect, Alex Tuck, and a first round pick for him, right? Like, he hadn't played. Pettersson's played poorly for 12 months. Jack Eichel hadn't played in 12 months because of an unprecedented back surgery that he'd had a disagreement with his team about, right? Like, there were a lot of teams too scared to play in that market. But there were teams that saw the vision, right? There were also teams that were into it, that were willing to part with massive assets to be the team that got to gamble on a franchise centerman. Because guess what? Unless you're drafted, you have to go through years of pain for a chance at landing these guys, right? And look, Pettersson's performance, big picture, right? Like, there was a time right around when he signed his contract where Pettersson was like a 1.15 points per game player. Right, he'd just come off a stretch where he'd had 115 or 120 points in that range across his last 80 or 70. I think it was 79 games played. Right, like preposterous mm-hmm. stuff, best in the league sort of production from Pettersson over a calendar year, and that gave him, in his 370 games played in his career, like almost 400 points. When you're 1.1 over 1 points per game between your age 20. And 26 seasons, that puts you in company of like 20 guys in NHL history. Maybe Pettersson doesn't really belong in that list. That's absolutely possible. Now, having struggled for a year, he's still at .97. Well, that puts you in more of like a 35 guys over the last 30 years of hockey list, which includes some names of guys who aren't, like, they were durable stars, but they weren't durable superstars on Stanley Cup winning teams. Guys like Claude Giroux and Alexei Yashin would, again, be the low-end comps. But for the most part, we're talking about the best in hockey over the last 30 years that qualify in this cohort that Pettersson still does. And I just find it hard to move on from that prior, right? Like, I'm not disregarding what we've seen. I just factor it in. And if you go through the list of those guys, like, Claude Giroux had some seasons in the high 50s. Followed up by seasons back to 100 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that happens to guys. Sometimes injuries involved, sometimes team environments involved. It's complicated, right? Giroux had a 58-point season, right? So he had 86 points, 73 points, 76 points, 58 points. This is right in the middle of his 20s, right in the middle of his prime. After the 58-point season, people were like, look back and laugh at those times when Claude Giroux was like compared to Sidney Crosby, because that also happened mm-hmm. during his exceptional prime. Next year, 102 points, 85 points the year after, right? I mean, hockey performance vacillates, and you have to, I think, be humble enough. you can't mistrust your eyes, right? You have to lean on what you're seeing, but you have to be humble enough to not rely on them solely in evaluating guys. You have to consider the whole, right? What you saw from Pettersson 2 years ago wasn't fake any more than his struggles are now. What you're trying to do is to come up with like a baseline and make sense of it and make the best possible bet. Here's the truth of the matter. Within the last month and a half, I guess 5 weeks, we had a real NHL team, a savvy NHL team, come to the table and make the Canucks a relatively similar offer for Elias Pettersson as what they made to the Colorado Avalanche for Mikko Rantanen, and they decided to go with Mikko Rantanen, who is a top 15 player in hockey, right? So within the last month, we have a, or just about,
yeah,
we have a real-time example of an NHL team offering real value for a player like Pettersson. At the end of the day, I think that tells you that while his value may be increasingly polarized around the league, those teams that are willing to swing on a player of this caliber, for those teams, his value is going to hold.
Yeah, I guess the point is ultimately like the risk is increasing. The longer it goes on, the risk is increasing. And that's true for the Canucks. That's true for teams acquiring him as well. And somebody texted in, what will these types of teams be willing to give up for him? Well, and I guess that's the other part of the question, right? Is because, yeah, there's going to be teams that are still interested. But if league-wide interest is declining, what are you able to get even like the Marty Natchez type deal, right? Like, you know what I mean? Or are they going to say, well, now you're screwed. Now we're the only guys who are interested. So now we can really hold your feet to the fire.
I still think deals in that realm will be available. I think the problem is, like, let's not kid ourselves about the situation the Canucks are in with Quinn Hughes banged up, JT Miller gone, Elias Pettersson, a shadow of himself, and Thatcher Demko hurt again. Like, this core group's in need of a Hail Mary connecting. Like, the Canucks are in need of a Hail Mary that connects if they're going to keep the short-term build that they've been pushing through across the last 7 years consistently, but with a far higher level of competence under new management the last 3.5 years or 2.5 years, right? If they're going to keep pushing through that and having success, they need a Hail Mary to connect. Well, there's no bigger Hail Mary in the league right now than Pettersson getting back to form. Like, that's the only thing, effectively, that can get the Canucks back on track, get them contending next year, be enough to incentivize Hughes to believe that he can win here and sign. Right? Like, what better path forward do you find? I mean, if you're going to say, like, Kent Johnson or something, sure. Like, you know what? There are probably some players in that mold, like young guys that are on the verge of breaking out, that I think you'd absolutely consider doing the deal for at this point, and probably should, given the risk profile. And then here.
But that's the question, right? It's, do those guys get off the table?
I don't know that a guy like him would have ever been on the table anyway. So you're looking at Sillinger, Cousins, right? You're looking at maybe if Utah decides to get really aggressive, would they consider doing Keller, trading some certainty for the ceiling that Pettersson provides, right? Because Keller, you feel much more confident that he's going to be a B.
All right, we got to put a pin in this conversation.
But books away for us. But you feel more confident that he's going to be a B. But a B doesn't get the Canucks to where they need to go.
Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Jason Buchla next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Buchla going to join us momentarily here. And in fact, we now have him on the line from Sportsnet's NHL coverage. Former director of amateur scouting in the NHL joins us every Wednesday here on the show. He is Jason Buchla. Books, what's going on, man?
Not too much, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing very, very well. I mean, how hyped are you for tomorrow's game? I know we're all extremely excited over here.
Yeah, same. Very excited. The tournament's been awesome. It's provided a lot of entertainment value and some observations that could be hypercritical or could be just flat out reality for some guys. And but for tomorrow night, I'm really excited. It's great for the game. You know, obviously a lot of interest south of the border has been stirred, and that's great news. I would argue that the Chucks could have started a podcast this week somewhere down there and probably lined up a ton of sponsors. And like I told some other people, had Big Walt waiting in the wings to come in and be a special guest now and again. And it's just good, right? It's a good feeling across the board right now for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, we just need one of them to date Taylor Swift or something, right? Like then they'd be on the Kelce brothers level. Hockey's got to work on that.
Yeah, that's not happening. But I hear what you're saying for sure.
Hey, I mean, how much fun are you having watching this tournament, Books? And as sort of a part of that, how much do you weight what you're seeing from various players at this tournament, given the intensity and pace of these games?
Well, Trancer, you know I'm a snapperhead when I'm watching, right? So I like to try and be by myself as much as possible because then I can murmur under my breath and stuff like that when I'm scouting games. For a Saturday night's game specifically, I was in my TV room, whatever. I like to call it the man cave. We'll just go with that. Down there, and I haven't felt that excited about a start. And I know it's just like they were dropping the flippers and stuff, but I haven't felt that excited for the emotion of a game in I can't remember how long. And the tournament started with the teams being shot out of a cannon in terms of speed and skill and mid-range execution because, you know, everybody had to get used to playing with each other. But having said that, I just think that it's just awesome. Like, it's really fun to watch. And I really hope that going forward, I don't care if I see another All-Star game. I really don't. I mean, it's just fluff. And I know it's good for local economies and things like that. And but every other year, I'm hoping that we're able to, at the very least, get all these nations together for these types of events. I'm really looking forward to the Olympics next year. This has been great. It's told me a lot about a lot of players, too, which is a bonus.
Who stood out to you in that regard that maybe you feel like has surprised you or impressed you more than you even thought of them going into the tournament?
Brock Faber is an absolute stud for U.S. I think I mentioned it last week to you guys, and I've heard some people say, well, he's playing with Jacob Slavin, and you know, Jacob Slavin shelters him a little bit. I would argue that Brock Faber gives everybody around him the confidence to play free. So that's something. Braden Point, I think as soon as he moved up to Connor McDavid's line, you could just see, even if he has to play out of position, the value and just how good Braden Point really is, his compete, his speed, his ability to make adjustments. He's a smart enough guy to understand that I'm going to get everywhere fast. I'm going to extend a play. I'm going to move a puck, and then I'm going to go to open space and see where it's at. Even on the one goal that he scored the other night, Sanheim comes late, gets the shot on goal, but you know, there's Point for the tuck. And I've been just really impressed with, you know, he's a Swiss Army knife. And we throw that around loosely sometimes, right? But honestly, he can play a variety of roles for you. He can play with the best player in the world, or he can play in the three and check, you know, top flight opponents. So really impressed with him. On the U.S. side, the Chucks, they just will you into the fight. It's fun to watch. It's a throwback. You sit there, and I don't wish this upon the Ottawa Senators, but you can just dream of those two someday playing together. You know, Brady's 3 years out of, or 2 or 3 years away from free agency, and we'll see where that all goes. I hope Ottawa gets a shovel in the ground for the new rink and they can build, continue to build around him and some other guys there. But the Chucks, they stir the drink and they will the entire team into the fight.
Books, I didn't hear on your list of highlights in this tournament, Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I was about to throw him in there for a different reason, but I'm glad you brought it up because then I can just go to town and leave off from here. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, the appetite in this market to, as someone in our inbox put it earlier today, pick at the Pettersson scab is inexhaustible. Obviously, a very quiet tournament from him. What are your thoughts on where his game is at?
Well, I think very quiet is being kind.
It is. I'm a kind person. That's what everyone says about me.
Yeah.
abysmal, brutal. 26% in the faceoff dot. Didn't have the puck and attack with it very often. Everybody saw the same thing. And, you know, I'm getting to the point here where it's, you know, are we going to continue? If you're healthy enough to go to put your nation's jersey on, even if you've got some nagging things, and a lot of guys have nagging things. Auston Matthews has nagging things. Charlie McAvoy, I don't know if he had something coming into the tournament, but holy jumping, was he sacrificing his body to the best of his ability there for Team USA. I don't know what's going on with Pettersson physically, but I can only assume when I go watch a player play that he's healthy enough to play to the best of his ability for his nation and his team. And that's how a scout has to approach it. Even when they're fighting through things, you put that aside and you hope that they can rise on their worst days, you know, through illness, through distraction, et cetera. He hasn't been able to do it in Vancouver. He absolutely didn't come close in the tournament for Sweden. He just looks like a shell of himself. And I'm beyond frustrated about it. Like I have a hard time making excuses for multi-million dollar athletes. I really do. Like guys that are getting paid north of $11 million. We've said it together. I've said it specifically. When you pay big money to go watch these guys play, you expect a certain type of result and at least an effort. And you have to have a B game if your A game isn't in place. He doesn't have a B game for me right now. And it's very frustrating.
To me, Books, the most concerning part of the tournament was, okay, he goes there and, you know, there's a lot, even he seemed to be in a better spot mentally, right? Talking to the media before it and you listen to the coach and his teammates. There was a lot of optimism, right? A lot of confidence in him basically saying, yeah, we know he hasn't had a great season in Vancouver, but we've got full confidence in him. He's going to be a great player here for us at this tournament. And what you see is his role just drastically declines over the three games to the point where he barely gets on the ice in the third period. And what that tells me is maybe they didn't know just how bad the season had been for him in Vancouver and they were almost surprised, but they realized in a hurry that he wasn't going to be one of the guys who helped them win games at that tournament. Like if you're someone around the NHL and obviously you know Pettersson has been struggling, but now you see it play out like that, does that, even though it's just three games, kind of really change your opinion about just how bad things have been for the player?
Yeah, probably solidifies it. I mean, we're running out of excuses, I guess, from a scouting perspective or from an executive perspective. I feel like if I'm in a meeting with our staff and we keep talking about it, there'll be a lot of sentences that end with but. You know, oh, but he's, you know, he needs some time. But when Miller gets traded, let's see how he performs. But, you know, but this, but that, we can go on forever. And, you know, the Canucks maybe are a team that heading into this break, probably didn't need a break, to be honest with you. They were starting to get back to where they can be, hopefully, as a team. And you know, you would have thought that he would have brought some of that confidence and a little bit more swagger to the tournament, and it didn't happen. And now as an executive, because his name's being floated around there in circles, I'm of the appetite right now that I'm not fishing in those waters. I'm just not. And the risk-reward attached to that salary and the scenario, I don't know that I can risk losing any of my high-end prospects or NHL roster players to take the risk. Now, the reward could be very high. I get it. But there's that sentence ending with a but. And I don't trust it. My trust hasn't ever been lower on him than it is right now.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations, Books, where it's going to be a polarizing eval at this point if a team is trading for him. And I guess where I keep coming back to is, you know, the moment the Canucks trade Pettersson, assuming they do, I'm going to spend years building lists of, hey, player who's struggling but has elite potential, whom the Canucks could maybe acquire and take a risky flyer on because they need elite talent more than anything else. Like, you know, my view kind of is that the Canucks are in a position in the wake of the Miller trade with the Demko, another Demko absence that they're facing over the next 10 days here. Quinn Hughes is likely to be banged up for the rest of the season and you know, becomes extension eligible after next year. Pettersson obviously shadowed himself. Like, the Canucks are already in throw a Hail Mary to preserve the competitive integrity of this core spot. You know, like, what's a bigger Hail Mary with higher upside that you could even throw in the NHL right now than going after Pettersson?
Yeah, no, and that's where you're conflicted, right, as an executive. And everything, the way you just position that, that's how you'll be talking me off the ledge in the meeting, for sure, you know, because I'm Debbie Downer about it. And but here's, it brings to... There's a piece of me that believes, and I don't know this for a fact. I'm not an insider. I'm not any of that, but I'm just spitballing. There's a piece of me that believes that the Buffalo Sabres need to throw a Hail Mary at something, right? They need to, I believe that the management staff there are kind of on their last legs. Something good has to happen here. There's been lots of noise around Dylan Cousins, you know, maybe Bowen Byram in there as well. This could be the ultimate Hail Mary that really plays out well for the Buffalo Sabres if they were to go after a player like Pettersson. And Pettersson, to be honest, it might be in reverse how players have, you know, how the Reinhardts of the world have gone elsewhere and performed at a high level when they left Buffalo. Pettersson might thrive in that environment where it's not as, he's not going to be under the microscope quite as much, right? And he might do very well. The thing with that is that the guys going out the door, if there was those two players, they have, like, if Cousins is even 60% of what he can be, I think Bowen Byram could be the home run in a deal like that. If you take a look at Bowen Byram, and I can't believe his name's actually floated around just even a little bit right now, he's a +9 on the Buffalo Sabres, plays 24 minutes a night, better than secondary offense. He's 23 and he's already won a Stanley Cup. Like, imagine the upside that he's got. But anyways, I digress. That's the example that I would throw at you guys. It would be maybe a little bit of a Hail Mary going back and forth there a little bit. There's not a lot of teams that can do it. That might be the team that can. And listen, Pettersson could go off. He could end up being a 100-point guy somewhere else. And, you know, I hope he does for his sake, because I look at him and I'm like, you're just way too talented. I've seen you do it to be this. Like, you're way better than this. But to your point, how long can we sit here and let it fester in Vancouver if it's not working? Because if you go past the expiry date, guys, that really affects the group's trajectory, where he's at right now.
It's a wild one. It's a baffling one. I know we've talked about it so much, and you're absolutely right. It is just a tremendously difficult decision that they're going to have to make coming up soon here. Let's look at the game tomorrow. Canada, U.S. in the final of the Four Nations. Of course, the U.S. wins in the round robin stage in Montreal on Saturday, 2-1 with the empty netter to make it 3-1. What does Canada need to do differently to have a different result in tomorrow's game?
I like the balance of the lineup better that they're going to ice tomorrow night compared to what they did on Saturday night. So that's one thing that they've already accomplished, and it looked much more, the top six group looked more free. They looked more in tune with each other. When you've had Marner and Reinhardt playing with McDavid, who's a burner who wants the puck, and you're playing with someone like Marner who also wants the puck, but he likes to kind of, you know, he's more of like a chess player, picking people apart on the perimeter and doing things. That didn't work. And so the adjustments that they've made up front, Stone, you know, playing with McDavid and Point, I like that. I like the growl in the middle of the lineup. Not that Marner provides growl, but listen, Mitch Marner, this is a takeaway for me too. This is where I'm going with takeaways in this tournament. Guys who think they're going to get paid in the offseason, Kyle Connor, for example, too, for the U.S., guys that are looking to get paid, this is an intriguing look inside where you are in relation to that really upper echelon player in the league. So when I hear numbers get thrown out there, call it 12.5, 13 million, whatever, for Mitch Marner, and I look at some of these other guys in this tournament, and I see him, he's a second-tier guy. And so where I go with that is that he's not producing offense other than the one good goal, which was, you know, Sidney Crosby drives him back. It's a drop pass. Boom. Hey, listen, if he doesn't pot that, who knows what this tournament looks like. So good news on that. But he's been much better. He's been okay. He's minus two, but he's been on balance pretty good defensively. What I'm saying here is that I like that how Canada has planed out their roster. Marner in the three is okay because you don't necessarily need him to score, but you need him to check. I really like the way Hagel plays, or, you know, Cirelli. These guys do those types of things. On the U.S. side, it's going to be curious to see how they put it all together with some of these injuries that they're dealing with. But rest assured, it doesn't matter how banged up that the Chucks are, or, you know, whoever else in the lineup, they're going to give absolutely – they're talking. Jack Eichel's on record today saying this might be the most important game of his career. This guy won a Stanley Cup. The most important game of his career. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome.
Okay. I love Mitch Marner. Big fan. Why does he make me nervous? The higher the stakes, every time he has a touch on the puck, I'm nervous as anything. Despite, like, rationally, I know he's great. Watching these games, and these are like the only games that I actually watch as a partisan, right? Like, there's no team I actually root for the way that I root for Team Canada in senior men's hockey. Like, it's different. I don't root for the same way with juniors. I think about the game differently. For some reason, the Canadian senior men's team is like the only time that I'm like, yeah, when I see a team score. It's the only game I watch emotionally. And so I'm not used to it. Rationally, I know Mitch Marner is a good player. In these games, especially when it's, you know, nut splitting time, as it were, I'm nervous every time. What? Is that a weird thing to say?
It's a new one for me.
Okay. Every time, I'm always nervous when he's involved in crunch time. Why?
Well, because the results in high leverage. This isn't Anaheim on a Thursday night. This is Team USA and Team Canada. And listen, let me use a baseball analogy to you. And this guy's in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the all-time greats. But he didn't have a lot of playoff success. Tony Gwynn hit 300 all for his whole career in regular season, right? He wasn't surrounded by great teams in San Diego. But what I'm trying to tell you is that he was awesome in regular season. But, you know, his team and whatever, they had no playoff success. Mitch Marner on one-offs between game 1 and 82, where teams are dealing with all kinds of different things. They prep differently. They're on the road. They're not. There's all kinds. You guys know the way it is between 1 and 82. It's a whole different animal come the drop of the puck in playoffs, where they can game plan against you. They make your life way more miserable. And tomorrow night, even though it's a one-off, this tournament's been building to tomorrow night, I feel the same way you do. You know, like I don't, he looks light. He looks immature compared to other high octane, high leverage performers in a game like that. He just feels different, looks different. And I don't know why it is that way, other than to say that that's just him. Like, that's just the way he's programmed. And that's not that he's not a hell of a player. He's a great regular season player. Maybe tomorrow night he goes off and scores a couple. That would be great. That might tell us something. But I'm with you. It just feels different. Like, there might be a puck over the glass, or he's going to lose that one battle, or whatever the case may be. And I don't know. That's why he's not a $13 million guy for me. He's a nice regular season player, but he has yet to prove it to me in playoffs. I hope he does someday, and then I'll change my tune.
Well, one of the wildest things about tomorrow's game is that one of Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews, one of them has to win a big-time game. It's an incredible situation. It's not, but both of them can't choke at the same time.
It's like how we need an all-Canadian Stanley Cup final to break the curse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which would be a lot of fun, by the way.
That would be pretty good. Before we let you go,
Edmonton, Boops, Ottawa, 2025, baby. Let's go.
Ooh. Ottawa, 2025?
They're an elite defensive team.
All right. Wow.
Omar could get hot.
That's a spicy pick right there.
He's like Demko. They both need to stay healthy for longer periods of time.
Yeah, fair.
Right? So, anyway,
speaking of goalies, before we let you go, we haven't talked a lot of Binnington on this show. Obviously, he's top of mind for a lot of Canadian hockey fans. What have you thought of his tournament?
just good enough. Just good enough. Let's in a muffin here and there. He leads the tournament in high danger saves, if you can believe that stat, from quality areas on the ice. Just make the last save, you know, be the Grant Fuhr that we need you to be. If you let in two, don't let the third one. I would also argue that Hellebuck in the U.S. net, who's probably the best goalie in the world, you know, maybe going to win his third Vezina this year, back-to-back. He needs this win just as much as we need Binnington to not lose it, if that makes sense to you guys, because he needs to get over that hump, too, in high-leverage situations. Binnington's a massive competitor. Anything's possible. He could steal it tomorrow night. But he's kind of like Drew Doughty for me. They're in survival mode, and you kind of got your fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about Doughty as well. Books, man, should be a ton of fun tomorrow to see how this one plays out. Thanks, as always, for the time. We'll chat next week.
Awesome, boys. Enjoy the game. Looking forward to the rest of the year here, so we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL as well, joining us here as he does every day on a Wednesday. And he is hyped as well. Of course he is. Everyone is. How could you not be? Jack Eichel calling it the biggest game of his career when he's won a Stanley Cup is incredible.
So sick.
Also, did you see Brad Marchand doing his Brad Marchand thing where he's just like absolutely lavishing the opposition team with praise?
No, I didn't.
He's like, they're literally the best team I've ever played against. They're the greatest team ever over there. Team USA. The classic Brad Marchand. It made me feel good as a Canadian. I was like, all right, he's doing it. He's winding up the playbook.
One of my favorite examples of that, by the way, is I was once told a story that, in contrast with the 2011 Stanley Cup final, when the Bruins made it back again and were defeated by Chicago in 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chicago skaters, you know, kept going up to guys like Marchand and Sean Thornton and Chara and like all the poke the bears guys, right? And, you know, they'd take some cross checks or whatever and be like, hey man, like, that's not cool. Like, what are your plans this summer? Like, we should grab dinner sometime. Like, just like killing them with kindness and like made a joke of it, like to the point where it like became the most annoying thing that they could possibly be doing was like, hey, how's your wife, man? Like, you know, we should really get the girls together this summer. It'd be great. We'd have lots of fun. And they just like killed them with kindness. And then finally, after the showtime, quick two goals that really broke the Bruins back, the trash talk came out for the rest of the last game. And it was something that Bruins players like absolutely hated.
I can imagine.
That Blackhawks team.
I can absolutely imagine. Jam Pro, from showrooms to stock rooms and everything in between, Jam Pro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. We'll do the whiteboard in the final segment here next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.